hear, that is true. Right? But the truth is that. And so a lot of times we really get anchored into what it is that we get, what we see from our perspective. And until you start asking different questions and living in different perspectives, you are not getting any closer to the truth. I don't think there's any such thing as the truth. I think there are versions of accuracy. And you got to ask the right questions to get there. So just going back, and I'm going to do a fly through of the history of medicine, is like back in the day, I will call this pre-modern medicine, we had healers, we had shamans. And these are people that, you know, were in service to others. In every tribe, there was somebody that wanted to help. So we call this pre-modern medicine. And then what happened is those people were hurting people while they were trying to help people. And this guy Hippocrates came along and said, you know what? We should not hurt people while we're trying to help them. And that was the birth of the Hippocratic Oath, which is right there. I can't read it. But it's, you know, let's do no harm. So then we get to early modern medicine with eventually the actual invention of penicillin, where now we can see things that we were never able to see, and we can do things we were never able to do, like treat infections. Kind of cool. And then what happened is we got modern medicine,
and it scaled up crazy, and you got
this is Texas Medical Center, which is like an entire city of medical stuff, and this is what a modern pharmaceutical manufacturing looks like. So we kind of got scaled up, and we pretty quick post World War II, and then we got this. This is our healthcare system.
Yeah, and by the way, this is
the United States healthcare system. And if you ask yourself, well, wait a minute, where's the doctor?
Right here.
Where's the patient?
Right here.
Right, and so if you look at how many things are between the doctor and the patient, it's madness. So the friction, the opacity, and the middlemen are really what makes the healthcare system kind of broken. So the world we live in is reactive medicine. That's not what I'm going to talk about, but this is, and by the way, whether you're in the UK, whether you're in France, whether you're in Canada, Switzerland might be the only exception, it sucks everywhere. And everybody gets some basic level of care, but it's really, in the other countries, you have to wait forever to get something done, but you can get into the basic stuff. Here you can't get into the basic stuff, but you can get pretty amazing stuff done. So there's this weird dichotomy out there. So what else has been happening since the pandemic? Trust in doctors has been going down. Doctors and nurses used to be the most trusted people in societies, next to firemen and nurses. And you know, whether that's misinformation or disinformation, it's a secular trend. So when people don't trust doctors, what do? They take things into their own hands. I'm gonna get my internet medical degree, and I'm smart in whatever field I'm in, and now I'm smart in medicine because I can read. But not really true. And so I wanted to briefly kind of pause that little
talk about prevention, because this is all about prevention. There's a prevention scale that, you know, primordial prevention is to make sure your kids make it to childbearing age so the species can exist. Primary prevention is to prevent a disease from happening, and this is seatbelts and vaccines. Secondary prevention is when you find an illness to prevent the disease. So if you have high cholesterol, you don't want to get a heart attack, so you do secondary prevention and you take a statin, or you do a lifestyle intervention, whatever it is. Tertiary prevention is you have the heart attack, and now we have to go all in on preventing the next one from killing you. So in 2018, I can't remember the guy's name, but they came up with quaternary prevention. Quaternary prevention is, methods to identify and mitigate unnecessary or excessive interventions by the healthcare system and unproven interventions by the longevity industry. So what I would say is that quaternary prevention really is the more you go to see the doctor, the sicker you can get and the more harm can be done. So we have to like take a big step back and ask ourselves, what are we doing? So
the evolution of private medicine, and I'm kind of one of the first people that started those years medicine universe, and I didn't really know what I was doing. I had a scooter, and I was making house calls in 1998, and it turned into something else. But you know, the current system is you see 3,000 patients, and I would ask anybody here who's in the service industry, how many clients can you have before you can't service them in a meaningful way? And the Dunbar number is 150. You know, so anyway, you can read all this, but ultimately, what private medicine is in the field that we pioneered, and I've got some of my doctors, Nima and Amanda back there, is we just have 100 patients, 100 members, but we're proactive, but we also have to be reactive because stuff happens. And we'll go into that a little bit more. The size of the concierge market in medicine is
growing, and if I put it against the slide of trust in doctors going down, like they map perfectly, lack of trust of doctors in general, the rise of concierge clinics where you can find trust again, you can find an advocate.
So private medical, anyway, this is just a brief at a glance about us. You know, we've been in practice for 22 years, we have 6 locations, 30 physicians,
you know, our expert network is really our superpower, one of our major ones, and the physicians themselves and the team members. We have a retention rate that's greater than 90%, and we've taken $0 in capital over that time. This is a bootstrapped business. So
let's talk about what's going on in the longevity space, not necessarily people here, but
in the general atmosphere, is there's a lot of hype. This one I just pulled off like last week, right before I did this, is the longevity clinic. We'll see you now for $100,000. So going back to like, it's for the rich and the super rich, like that is true. And there's a lot of claims being made. And there's a lot of things being promoted
and pushed, and some with science and some without, but
it's sexy and it's new and it's different and I don't trust doctors and I want to do something else.
So for those of you familiar with the hype cycle, it existed in tech, it exists in everything. We are in a hype cycle right now. Let's all just embrace it and be honest about it. And let's not say it's not. We're kind of on the way up. There's amazing hype going on in longevity, which is good to bring awareness. But like the truth is like this is going to shake out. And like anything, there's going to be a couple of names and brands that really stick out that have done their work, that have been kind of doing the honest hard work of trying to figure out what is the combination of things that need to come together to build a community that focuses on outcomes and relationships and appropriate and science-based interventions. So for the scientists here, you know this, but this is, I kind of go back to this over and over again. What is the hierarchy of scientific evidence? So anytime someone says, hey, have you tried this? Have you done this? What do you think about this? I'm like, well, show me what the evidence says. And they'll say, oh, well, I read this article in the New York Times. I'm like, yeah, but that was on a mouse. And for those of you who know, 93% of mouse studies never make it to human qualifications. They stop. So mices are interesting. Mices, they're interesting. But you have to ask, what was the study that was done? And when the study is done on a nematode or a worm, and they cured blindness in a worm, that's an interesting, cool thing, but that has nothing to do with humans right now. So what happens is the translation of science at these interesting scientific levels, they get written about in the public and the big press, and no one actually does the real homework, and there are people here that are, but in general, people don't do the real homework to double-click, triple-click, and really understand that. And so this is the thing about science and pseudoscience, and so this is like another North Star, is that, I'm not gonna read it, look at it, but what's important here is science seeks falsifications. A real scientist wants to be proven wrong. That's what they do. They want it to be reproduced by somebody else, and if you can't prove me wrong, I'm right. That's what science is. But we embrace criticism. We want you to take us on. Everybody else who's not doing that is suspect to me. So going back to what are the right questions we should be asking. How strong is the evidence, right? And Carl Sagan said, extraordinary claims require extraordinary evidence. This is true. So there's a lot of extraordinary claims being made right now that I think are a little bit bloated. And the question is, was the evidence peer-reviewed? Was it from the biohacker community? Was it from the social media influencer community by people that are MDs or PhDs, but really good translators? We have to be curious, skeptical, and honest when we are talking about science, because it's not child's play. And I will go through some examples of what happens when people get really excited about that. Is it true? So there's a website called Retraction Watch. Does anybody know what it is? I get a daily email from Retraction Watch. There are multiple studies that are published every day that cite studies that have been retracted. So people are layering their claims on false information to begin with. So it's really hard, and it requires a lot of honest diligence to look at any study. And then look at this. This is all in the last week this came out. These are headlines. Like, there's some hijacking scam that targets Elsevier, Springer, and Nature, these major publications. There's a fake version of these things being promoted. So, like I said, part of it is like knowing how to decipher and look at science. But then what I do with my big network of doctors that I know all over and scientists is like, hey, can you look at this? And I can have a diligent scientific paper looked at by an expert that's all they do. I'll give you an example at the end, where they can say, oh, this is good, but the scientist has got a bunch of other papers that you didn't know about, and he's been in trouble with other things. And so a lot of it is just the human network and the network of trusted people that you know to really understand how quality, where the quality of the science is.
So the, oh, that didn't work. So the, it's all black. So the sick care model, I'm just gonna use this as a quick straw man, is patient comes in with a problem, you gotta go through some version of friction, the government or insurance system, and then there's usually a doctor with a solution over there. It's sporadic, it's diagnosis, it's treatment, it's specialty care, it's hospital-like. We all know what the healthcare system is. It was built on, I had a problem, I was in a ditch, somebody pulled me out of it. Okay, that bums me out. There it goes again. Okay, well, I'll tell you what's in it. So the concierge model is proactive, it's relational, not transactional, it's designed, and it's accountable. People say to me, well, how do you judge the quality of your doctors? How do you measure? I'm like, look, people can quit my practice whenever they want. If we don't do a good job, they quit. They fire us. That's how we hold ourselves accountable. If we do a great job, they tell their friends. We've grown by word of mouth for 20 plus years because we hold ourselves accountable and we feel very invested in the outcomes and the well-being and the care of our patients and their families. But we are outcomes focused, we focus on early detection. So when people say, what is longevity? Like, longevity medicine to me is really good healthcare, really good primary care. Now with a whole layer of advanced testing that we can do to understand, like, really what is your portfolio of risk? We are all depreciating assets and we just have to be honest about it. But even you, Peter. And so, sorry. It's comprehensive treatment. It's advocacy, navigation, and coordination. It's specialty care networks. And by the way, you can't underestimate the power of the networks. I just got an email while I was sitting over there waiting to come up, and one of my doctors in New York said, hey, look, I'm looking to get a referral to CGAT in Germany for a patient with cancer. We want to do some vaccines. I'm like, sure, I know Saskia, and we just made the, Nima and I did, made the introduction to the doctor. So the fact that we can get stuff done on the fly and connect people with interesting networks is interesting. We work with all the hospitals, so we know how to get in and get out as fast as possible. That's really important. Longevity is getting out of the hospital fast. And what do we charge for? We charge an annual fee, and we charge for maybe some vaccines and maybe testing for some viruses when you come in. We do not want to make money on anything, and I'll talk a little about that later. Oh, and by the way, just and over there where Black Spot is, this is medical teams, and so we organize our staff and doctors and nurses and patient care administrators to really make your patient's life easier. In the longevity clinic model, which is an evolution, and a lot of you up here, I mean, it's proactive and it's designed. To be determined how accountable, I just don't know, so I left those things off. But it is outcomes focused, it's early detection, it's lifestyle, it's diagnosis. A lot of things, there's more biohacking and experimental things going on based on my scientific evidence piece. Now, some people may say, oh, Jordan, you're such an old school stick in the mud with your, you want the best meta-analysis of evidence. But the truth is like, we do go into some experimental stuff. Coordinated with outside providers, we found a lot of longevity clinics that do stuff, and then bad things happen, or things go wrong, or something else happens. They're not really connected with the medical community in a meaningful way, and then we wind up kind of having to participate in a lot bigger way. Specialty referral network, again, something I think that needs to be worked on and developed. Hospital affiliations, not really, I don't think. And then what is charge? And I've just seen, there's a lot of things, there's a lot of testing that we make money on, and then there's a lot of interventions we make money on. So there's a very transactional component to it. So for me, safety and efficacy are the two dimensions that matter the most. And if it's safe and it's effective, it's not risky. It's probably FDA approved, probably pretty boring to the biohacking community. If it's safe and not effective, there's a lot of things that are safe and not effective. I say effective, I mean really with a strong a statistical power of being effective. You're just spending your money, you're gambling, who cares? You lost some money, but you didn't harm yourself. Then there's effective and not safe. And I've got a lot of examples of people doing stuff to themselves where they take a lot of testosterone, these guys, their numbers go up to 1500, their cholesterol goes up, their blood pressure goes up, their viscosity of their blood goes up. I got a bloodlet from them. And they want to have sex with their wife every day. One woman said, please tell my husband to stop. And by the way, I didn't even know he was taking it because he got it from a plastic surgeon in Reno who was getting all this testosterone. And that's how I look. Anyway, so there's a lot of negative consequences to effective and not safe. And then, of course, if it's not effective and not safe, you're an idiot. I don't know what you're doing. I'm going to call something out here. So one of my patients said to me not too long ago, hey doc, I went to a longevity clinic and an exercise guy, they wanted to give me L-carnitine. injectable. I'm like, wow, injectable. He's like, yeah, but you have to buy it for me and then I'll inject it myself. And I said, okay, what? L-carnitine injection? And he said, yeah. I said, well, how do we know there's L-carnitine in there? He goes, because it says so right there. And I said, well, okay. Well, how do you know there's L-carnitine in there? He goes, because it says so right there. I said, well, there's a guy in New York for $10,000. It's a lot of money. They test all the generic drugs for the FDA that come in. And I said, let's run a test and see what's in there. And I said, but you have to pay for it. I'm not paying for it. And he said, I'll pay for it. It's some crypto guy. He had a lot of money. And so, do you want to see what was in there?
Yes.
Do you want to see what was in there? Okay. Was there carnitine in there?
Yeah.
Oh, there was carnitine there. But what else was in there? That's what I want to know. Okay, so there was L-carnitine in there. And there was also 5-2-aminopropyl-2,3-dihydro-1-H-endine, which is an MDMA derivative. Now, if I go back, it says potential benefits of promoting weight loss and improving overall well-being. Well, guess what? You're going to feel great when you got a little microdose of MDMA. But it also had an herbicide in it. Okay, that's a plant killer. It had some other fatty acid product in it. It had another MDMA derivative in it. And then it had another compound in it. Okay, crazy. So, is it dangerous? This happened to me. One of my patients got stem cell injection from an orthopedic surgeon, didn't tell me, and said, hey doc, my aura ring's telling me I'm really stressed out, something's going on in my body. And I was like, huh, is it like that ever? Never like that. It's always super low and something happened. I'm like, okay, well, and that's not really good. November 26th, hey, I'm having some SVTs. My heart rate's going to 100, going from like 50 to 160. I'm like, wow, that's not good. I'm very concerned now. Keep monitoring this very closely. And then the day after Thanksgiving, he sends me his blood pressure. If anybody knows what that means, that's a medical emergency. That is a malignant hypertension number right there. And I freaked out. Like, and by the way, there goes my Thanksgiving. And guess who I was working for? The stem cell company and the guy that did the injection, because they're on their vacations in Hawaii with all their money, and I'm not cleaning up the mess here. And so I had to put him on prescription medications to get his blood pressure down. Then the next day, he emailed the CEO of the stem cell company. The guy goes, oh yeah, it's not us. This must not be us. It's got to be, you have some underlying problem that you didn't know. So the patient writes this pretty nasty gram email to the CEO. And this is a tech titan here who's not to be trifled with. And he sends this message to the CEO of the company. And then everyone's calling me, hey, we think you should do this and we think you should do that. I'm like, you're a stem cell company and you're an orthopedic surgeon. Don't tell me how to practice internal medicine. Please, like, this is bananas. But they became a huge time occupying lesion in my life. So I guess what I wanted to say is, like, when you tug on a single thing in health or nature, it's connected to everything else. You can't look at things in pure isolation. I think it's unfair and it's intellectually dishonest to do that. You've got to realize there's a lot of things connected to it. And so, you know, this gets into the ethics of it all, and there's something called the moral hazard. If you don't know what a moral hazard is, like my father talked to me when I was younger, which is when one party's insulated from the risk and behaves differently, they would have if they bore the consequences of the risk, right? So I will just kind of come to the end here, which is like, let's not move fast and break things. Let's move slow and not kill people. And be really methodical. Everyone in science is always like, oh, this stuff's gonna change the world, and then like 20 years later, it still doesn't change the world. We can change your trajectory. We can make you healthier, we can make you live longer. It requires a collaboration between the clinician and the patient, for sure. And so I think like kind of coming towards the end is like concierge clinics like mine and longevity clinics like a lot of yours, we have to find a way to work together because we do all the stuff that breaks. And most of the time, the longevity clinics are trying to prevent the things from breaking. We do that too, but when things break, they land on our lap. And so we don't mind fixing problems that break because that's what we do. But we don't like iatrogenic fixes when the medical system broke something that we actually are now doing all this work to fix something that should never have been done in the first place. So Voltaire said, The art of medicine is to keep your patient in a good mood
while nature takes its course in 1744. I decided I was going to come up with the Schlein version of the Voltaire
in 2024, which is the art of longevity medicine is to keep our cells young
while pursuing our minds to be patient enough to wait for the science and research to catch up to our aspirations. So that is my version of Voltaire. And
I will just say, this is an ancient prescription.
This is written by Celsus in 25 BC. There's me and Eric taking our dogs on a walk up on Mount Tam, and it's, read it. Like, this is written 2,500 years ago, or 2,000 years ago, and it's kind of like Dean Ornish's talk in an ancient prescription, which is like, it's not complicated. Most of it's free.
And so I will just say that these are the books that I read the book by Lee and Nathan. They're here, great book. This is Occam's Razor, great Life of William of Ockham, great book. And I mean, if you could stomach it, this is what I read in my spare time, which is the history of Western philosophy. And I'll just say, lastly, I wrote a piece on scientific rascality. I write some essays on philosophy and medicine. This kind of summarizes in a fun way a lot of things I talked about today. If you want to read that article, you can. And remember, time lost cannot be regained. And I'll end there. Thank you.
Wow, this was great, wasn't it? So now we are changing again at trajectory, and we will be going to more practical solutions. We want to discuss.